Joy.
Hi.
Hey.
What happened to my version? Okay, yeah. Translation for Srila Prabhupada. Dharma, the bull, is asking Bhumi why she's looking unhappy. And he says, are you feeling compunction for the unhappy women and children who are left forlorn by unscrupulous persons? Or are you unhappy because the goddess of learning is being handled by brahmanas addicted to acts against the principles of religion? Or are you sorry to see that the brahmanas have taken shelter of administrative families that do not respect brahminical culture? Okay, please repeat. Are you feeling compunction?
Are you feeling compunction?
For the unhappy women and children.
For the unhappy women and children.
Who are left forlorn.
Who are left forlorn.
By unscrupulous persons. Or are you unhappy?
Or are you unhappy?
Because the goddess of learning. Is being handled by brahmanas. Addicted to acts against the principles of religion. Or are you sorry to see that the brahmanas have taken shelter of administrative families that do not respect brahminical culture? Okay, we are flying the ship. my mind is soaked everywhere. We got back to Lima, and we finished off in, I told you, maybe I mentioned, in Chile. And then we got on this radio show with Ari Palak. And he usually gives about 10 minutes to different people. He has 30 minutes at the end of his 6 hours of radio shows. And he gave us the full 30 minutes, you know, the devotees, ourselves. And I asked him how many people were listening. He said at least 40,000. At least 40,000 people. And fortunately, he's a communicator, so he spoke very clear, simple Spanish, and had really good questions, you know, about what is reincarnation, and all the vegetarian, very basic things. So that really feel like it satisfied the message is going out like that. You know? And then we got back here, and we're running everywhere in Lima, because yesterday, it's very appropriate for this verse, yesterday with San Marcos University, which along with the University of Mexico is the oldest university in the Western world. We had a program there, and it was in Casón de San Marcos, which is the original location of the university, and it's just been reconstructed by $3 million of money from the Spanish. Otherwise, it was like, you know, like a ruin, an architectural ruin. And you can just see the difference in scholarship. There was a patio for each different faculty, the faculty of medicine, the faculty of this, with all their little rooms around it, a nice garden, nice little fountain. Then you go through the arch to the other faculties. And you could see exactly where all the docents, the professors would sit in certain places for examining the students and their work like that. So, but the topic was corruption in government, and is it possible to solve it? So there were three speakers, and the first person was Hector Bejar, who's 74 years old, but he sounds like he's 45 years old. Incredible. But he was in Che Guevara's, you know, shooting bullets army, like that. You know? And he just continued. He lived through it and kept on going and becoming the academic side of the thing. He's on the UNESCO Committee for South America for Fighting Poverty. And he had this unbelievable presentation about Peru. and the government and everything else, and the politicians, and the especially the ecological problems. And it's just, you know, the so much of the economy and everything here is being controlled by big international corporations. And beyond that, they buy off the politicians. And so their real thing is just profit, you know, blindly focusing on profit. And they're going to cut, they have a whole contract now to go through and cut down another like 15% of the forests. And you see, you know, he says it's very clear just that Peru is going to be a desert within 50 years. You know, it's just like really incredible in Kali Yuga. Then Miguel Polo was the other person. And he's our friend ever since we came here. He was head of the Department of Philosophy in San Marcos. And he also he competed to become dean of the School of Liberal Arts, and he lost by 15%. So very also powerful, intelligent person, but also very jolly. So he likes Buddhism, you know. But of course, the Buddhists say, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him, because of course even Buddha is illusion. So he likes Buddhism, but he won't call himself a Buddhist. Nah. But we have always very kind of friendly debates and stuff like that. And he's kind of come around to the position of accepting that Buddha never said there wasn't a God. He never talked about it. So that's before he was like, well, there is no God. So now he wants to listen to other religions and what they have to say. He's interested. Some progress. You know. But again, he analyzed the thing about ethics in the government. And he was going through all these same points. It was a very, you can see why he's, of course, a full professor and head of the department. Such a very clear analysis of all the different aspects. The politicians are not just to blame. They're being supported by the electorate, you know. And what is the ideological basis behind it, every single ethical system like that? You know, what are the results? So it was so just exactly to this verse and, of course, yesterday's verse. And what we did, because it's Ram Navami, we presented Ayodhya as the Camelot of Asia. Because people here, they know Camelot, they relate to it. But they don't know Ayodhya. That's our whole task. They don't know the wealth of the Indian perspective. But in Peru, they're very, very classical culture in many ways. They've had the Inca culture, and they've had the Spanish culture. And then after that, they had the Sendero Luminoso, which was just like the Naxalites in Calcutta. Like that. Yeah. And so they have different cultural perspectives, much more than other countries, especially classical. So they can look at Indian classical culture with respect, the same way they look at like other cultures. And so it was the first time, of course, most of them were actually hearing about Ram. So we presented for the ninth canto, where it talks about Ramachandra's character and how he brought in Satya Yuga, even though it was Treta Yuga. And Prabhupada says, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we can do the same thing. We can bring in Satya Yuga, even in this Kali Yuga, like that. And it was talking about all the good qualities of his kingdom. And of course, here we see in these dialogues, Dharma is bringing out all the bad qualities. And the purports, Prabhupada's expanding this, is unbelievably lucid. I was thinking of supporting our position by quoting from the Encyclopedia Britannica, quoting from different Western Indologists who say that Bhagavatam is great. But as I was doing that, I was just seeing that Prabhupada's words are just so pure, you know, so powerful. That it's not something coming from the imagination, it's not something coming from speculation, it's something coming from a direct experience, you know, of reality. So when the description of Ramachandra's kingdom is there, even though they don't understand everything, you know, Ram, Lakshman, they can appreciate, oh, this is coming from a very mature culture with many different aspects. It's not just like Harry Potter or something like that where somebody imagines some world. It's coming from a big world. It must be real. Then the second section, we went in and presented the background of the Bhagavatam, which is how Narada Muni was instructing Vyasadeva about the mistakes he made and what was the Kali Yuga. And again, it's very potent. And we finished off with some citations from the West. But those were afterwards, because it's just self-evident. Everybody was looking at the audience. Everybody was just watching. Because basically when Chandramukhi, Mataji, she was reading it. Vedabase.com has everything in Spanish now. So you can make a very nice PowerPoint show with some pictures. And everybody was just watching. Everybody was very attentive. And she was reading with some feeling. And it was really touching everybody. Yeah? And then some Western authorities about the quality of the Bhagavatam. And our proposal is then that these people, these academic scholars, they all join us and they start to do some serious reading of these classics in the Orient like that. So I think little by little we're opening an aperture. And here today, if you read this verse today, we go ahead here now, because yesterday's verse, of course, was just so incredible, but it's the same thing. You know, Prabhupada says in the purport, in the age of Kali, the women and children, and Prabhupada adds here now, it's not in the text, but he adds it, along with the brahmanas and cows, I guess that's from yesterday's verse, no? In the age of Kali, the women and children, along with brahmanas and cows, will be grossly neglected and left unprotected. Now that came out yesterday too. Peru is maybe number two in the level of child employment. You know, and that doesn't mean like, you know, nice jobs like a paper route after school. That means 10 hours a day, you know, working with no education, you know, to make some money. Yeah. And so Peru is, you know, number two in the world in its level of percentage of children who are employed in the workforce like that. Yeah. In the age of Kali, women and children, along with brahmanas and cows, will be grossly neglected and unprotected. Yeah. In this age, illicit connection with women will render many women and children uncared for. So who are they working for? Exxon, Chevron, you know, Microsoft, Intel. The mining industry is very big here, and they don't need it. It's unbelievable, the ecology here and everything else, the resources. It's unbelievable how rich it is in terms of natural resources and you know, jungle and nice things like that. But there's this comment that the CIA keeps enough confusion in the politics and everything else that people can't make a decent living in the country. So they have to go work in the mines. And what do the mines produce? All these very rare elements that we North Americans then use to produce this high-tech, you know, computer equipment. Because without iridium and all these kind of things, you cannot produce these very, very high-worked metal devices. So right now, as we're talking right now, we're supporting, you know, this child labor force, the mining industry like that. That point also came up, you know, about how the brahmanas are forced to take money from that'll come up later in this verse. I'll bring it up then. Okay. That's unprojected. In this age, illicit connection with women will render many women and children uncared for. Circumstantially, the women will try to become independent of the protection of men. And marriage will be performed as a formal agreement between man and women. A man and woman. So I was thinking about this, and it doesn't say between gentlemen and ladies. It says between man and woman. And the consciousness is that we are this body, and whatever this gratification there is possible for this body, you know, maybe I'll take you out for dinner at McDonald's. Like that, but I'm not going to take you out to dinner at, you know, the restaurant with tablecloths. Forget it, you know, like that. Take you out to dinner with McDonald's, and afterwards we'll go to a, you know, a movie. Okay, you know, we're not going to go to the opera. Yeah, marriage will be performed as a matter of formal agreement between man and woman, you know, Fifi and Fido, you know, yeah, and a formal agreement. What is marriage? In the mode of passion, it's a combination of two families, you know, for the development of honor, prestige, you know, high-sounding things like that. And the mode of goodness, of course, is a combination for spiritual progress. Of course, this whole thing about marriage is a very sophisticated topic, but even in the West, there's agape and eros. Eros is kama, it's lust. Yeah, you get married to take care of your lust. It's like you take prasadam to satisfy your lusts. You can do better things. But agape is the marriage between man and woman to achieve a higher spiritual consciousness. And until like the 14th century or something like that, that was the real purpose of marriage. That was the idea in the Catholic Church and things like that. You know? Prabhupada is saying now that this be performed as a formal agreement between man and woman, and there'll be nothing more than the formality of it in terms of like rituals and performances and family responsibilities and all these kind of things like that. You know? When Victoria was there in England, she was called the grandmother of Europe because so many of her children, I don't know how many children she had, I think quite a few, maybe 14 or something, huh? They all married into all the European aristocracy. So then all of her children were actually all over Europe in terms of like participating in all these aristocratic, you know, noble families. And there was this feeling that we have a responsibility to each other. We're all a part of a family. You Germans are planning on invading England for World War I, but my mother is there. You know, so there was this feeling amongst the royal families of keeping some kind of respect for each other, and it was a family fight. Okay, we can have a family fight, but we're still family. Like that, you know? A formal agreement between man and woman. In most cases, the children will not be taken care of properly. In most cases. Okay, then Prabhupada goes to the second point, which is about the brahmanas, you know, who are not of good character handling knowledge. So I guess we can go over that. The brahmanas are traditionally intelligent men, Prabhupada says, and thus they will be able to pick up modern education to the topmost rank. But as far as moral and religious principles are concerned, they shall be the most fallen. Wow. Such intense things, so insightful. Yeah. And is this the prediction of Kali Yuga from the Acharyas, or is Prabhupada using his own insight to say these things? Very interesting. Look back at Vishnath Chakravarti's commentaries. No? And this is very common, and I know in the university everything else, is that the kinds of perverted sex life, kinky sexual activities that the professors would get into at the university, the common man couldn't even dream of this. You know? They would use such complicated things. And of course, you know, adulterous relationships amongst university faculty communities is a notorious thing in many ways. You know, it's a different standard, but it does happen that these people, when you have this high education, you start using it for the most, you know, sophisticated forms of perversion and sense gratification like that, and degradation like that. You know? So, but as far as moral principles are concerned, the moral principles and religious are concerned, they should be the most fallen. Education and bad character go ill together, but such things will run parallel. Yeah. So, of course, the example is the snake with a jewel on his head is more dangerous than an ordinary snake. And the Upanishad talks about the Vedavata Ratas, who are worse than people who are stupid. Stupid guys do stupid things, but the Vedavata Ratas are people who know the Vedas, they know science and technology, and they use these things to increase, you know, the simple activities beyond belief. I guess Viagra, you know, you see all that being advertised everywhere, it's stuck in your face left and right. People who are, nature is just arranged, they've been engaging in so much illicit relationships that they become impotent. So nature, maybe at least trying to protect them from doing something more horrible, but then they defy nature and then using artificial drugs, other means, then go on to engage in more horrible relationships. The karma is unbelievable. And again, you can see it already on this planet. You know, last night, this thing was, you know, if you really absorb what these educated people are telling you about the future of this country, which is not all that different than other countries, you know, it's unbelievable. And they have some hope, even still, the people we're dealing with, that something can be done, but they're very frustrated. They're very frustrated with monarchy. They're frustrated with, you know, with communism. They're frustrated with democracy. They're frustrated with capitalism, you know. And so, what's the solution? And of course, we're here, you know. Just we have it, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, regular representation, making dramas, movies, shows, you know, out of the thing, and educating brahmanas to start with, you know, educating people who can make media for the common people like that. So that's what the brahmanas should be doing. But here, Prabhupada is saying they will be the most fallen. And the third point, the administrative heads as a class will condemn the tenets of Vedic wisdom and will prefer to conduct the so-called secular state. And the so-called educated Brahmins will be purchased by such unscrupulous administrators. It's so precise. Prabhupada is saying, even a philosopher and writer of many books on religious principles may also accept an exalted post in a government which denies all the moral codes of the Shastras. So I think it's a kind of open secret that Prabhupada was talking about Radhakrishnan here. He became the president of India, I think, when Nehru was the chief prime minister. I think Radhakrishnan was the president, which in India is like a very formal type post. And very respected as a writer of many things like that, and probably even appreciating his good qualities. But he was saying here he was in some ways influenced by the opulence and the money and took a position in a government which was actually supporting animal slaughter. And he was glorified as a high-class Brahmin. Even a philosopher and writer of many books on religious principles may also accept an exalted post in a government which denies all the moral codes of the Shastras. The Brahmanas are specifically restricted from accepting such service, but in this age, they will not only accept service, but they will do so even if it is of the meanest quality. Like that. These are some of the symptoms of Kali Yuga, which are harmful to the general welfare of human society. So this is very, very practical. At the end of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has presented Sankhya, Buddhi Yoga. But then Prabhupada says it's not enough. He hasn't given a real practical way for Arjuna to apply it. And of course, Arjuna is a man of action. So he really needs to see some battle plan before he can really understand the philosophy. So in the third chapter then, Krishna talks about vritti, professional devotional service. And you know, you've got to have your profession. You've got to be a mother. You've got to be a kshatriya. You've got to be a brahmana. And that's your service. Being a brahmana is your service. Being a mother is your service. Being a sister is your service. Being a kshatriya, administrator. Daivi varna, ashrama. You know? And so then it's very practical to discuss these things. The first point, of course, was the first point, so it's the one that stuck in my mind the most. And it's a very controversial topic, you know. I'll bring up some points. And that's very interesting, too, because the same thing. Right now we have a big controversy. We're supposed to have initiations tomorrow on Sunday, on Ramachandra's, the Sunday feast of Ramachandra. But then right away these controversies have come up that different people have been, aren't qualified for second initiation, and this and that happened. So, the mother is supporting her child completely. He's completely innocent, and then the wife of the person supporting her husband, he's completely innocent. And then the administrators of the temples, they say, well, we should go ahead and give the administration because we don't have enough pujaris. And so I'm just the Diksha guru, the family priest, for both of the people involved in this, and I'm trying to keep my position. And I was really realizing that it's very difficult, if we promote sannyasa ashram, like sannyasa ashram, where people, they don't have, much contact with the opposite sex, like that, and they're not involved in administration, politics, money, men, then they have some kind of neutrality on the position. They don't have any kind of axe to grind in terms of you know, services or anything else, and they can hopefully give some kind of like impartial view of things to some degree like that, you know. But it's very difficult, and that's why in general, in Parashara says the best thing is for a lot of people to discuss the topics, good people, and then come to a conclusion about what is the actual situation like that, you know. So here it says that women and children will be, what's the word, because they'll be neglected by unscrupulous persons. So that aspect is giving more credence to the position of men, that men aren't doing their duty properly, and not, you know, they're becoming, like Prabhupada says, they're becoming bachelor daddies, and they're leaving their wives and children unprotected like that. Yeah? On the other hand, in the light of the Bhagavad, text number 11, got it right here on my Kindle. Yeah, text number 14, it says, The lightning becomes unsteady in its friendship, failing to remain faithfully in any one of the clouds, although they are the friends of the entire world. The clouds. Just as lusty women do not remain steady even in the company of a man who possesses excellent qualities. Now, of course, this is a man who possesses excellent qualities. It's not somebody who's like, you know, very weak in his character and in his ashram position. But then there are problems, especially, you know, talking about the problem that ladies have, that, you know, there was a Chanika Pandit says, woman is embracing one man, looking at another, and thinking of a third, you know. And so this is the problem that the ladies have from their side of the thing like that. That they, you know, maybe not lust for gross gratification, for gross sexual gratification, but lust for an automobile, you know, lust for a bigger house, lust for prestige and honor in society. And because of that, then, if the husband doesn't gratify them, then their fighting develops and they go looking for somebody else. And with a good voice, nice figure, intelligence, you know, they can attract somebody else. But here then Prabhupada, of course, is recommending, no, you have to realize this is a danger, realize this is a part of your feminine temptation, and not use it. Okay, you stay with one man, and keep the business going, keep it protected, keep the children protected. So, yeah. And one, I haven't got my notes here too, but we were collecting notes on this from as we're going through the Bhagavatam, and so many notes on for Sri Dharma, Dharma of ladies. And again, I know I have prejudice in terms of this. I'm a male body, I'm a sannyasi, so therefore we're going to have other people. Please give your comments on this. Maybe get a make some nice advancement on this topic. You know. But there is directly a citation where Prabhupada says that usually divorce comes about because of weakness of the woman's character, like that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, we're seeing the problem, the Bhagavatam is saying here, unscrupulous men are causing these problems. One last kind of thing is to go through the Bhagavatam and to look at different stories of where ladies have been the cause of the problem. In most cases, we don't see that. For example, Sita wasn't the cause of a problem. Mandodari, very famous. She was the daughter of Vishvakarma. Ravana wanted her for his wife, to enjoy her. Then her father, Vishvakarma, was going to fight with him to protect her. And so she said, no way, Daddy. Look, he's going to kill you and all my brothers and take me anyway. So please give me to him, and you all live like that. So then Ravana got her, and she took it as a fair deal. And he let my family live, and so I'll be a chaste wife. And so, of course, she's an example of this. So, you know, another one, of course, is Gandhari. She's a super example of a chaste girl like that, you know, following her husband. So many wonderful examples. Draupadi, you know. A bad example, of course, is what? The first one we come in contact is pregnancy of Diti in the evening. And there, you know, Kashyapa was weak, but he apparently wasn't an unscrupulous fellow. But Diti was plagued by some desire for honor, you know, some feelings of inferiority in the presence of her co-wives, that she didn't have a child by her husband. And so then she then agitated him, and all these, you know, horrible things happened. Another example is, one more, actually I was thinking about it, but not many. I can't remember what it is now even. No, because everybody else in the Bhagavatam, usually the ladies in the Bhagavatam are, you know, not the cause of the problems like that. One more example. You can go ahead in the Bhagavatam. Oh yeah, Suruchi, stepmother. And Sudamana Maharaj is making this point that that's a very big challenge, being a stepmother and dealing with it properly. Of course, Gandhari was a stepmother, and she dealt with her wasn't a co-wife, but they were her nephews, and she had no problem dealing with the Pandavas in general sense like that. But Suruchi, of course, that she was so, you know, lusty for prestige and fame to her son, that she told Dhruva he couldn't sit on the lap of the king unless he took birth from her womb, like that. Yeah. Other than that, so many stories, you know, about very chaste girls like Chaivana and, what's her name? Chaivana and Sukanya, like that. Yeah. So it's kind of some point here. In general, the basic, I would say, summary is that, yeah, that there is, we're having this problem in ISKCON, in the whole society. And then Prabhupada says that women will try and become independent, because if nobody's protecting us, let's become independent and take care of ourselves, you know. So that's the question. Is that really a viable alternative? Or what's the other alternative rather than becoming independent? In Peru, in many countries, the ratio of men to women in South America, places like that, is like, you know, maybe 3 to 1, 3 girls to each man, or 5 or 6 girls to each man. And the odd thing is, of course, is homosexuality, which even decreases the number of possible marriage partners. And the bizarre thing is, too, is that everybody is still keeping this, artificially maintaining monogamy, which brings us into another wonderful topic, too, is that polygamy is the Vedic way to try and adjust the situation so that everybody is protected, but it's a very sophisticated system like that. But practically speaking, it seems like this, that we were discussing this last night, that there is no real solution to these problems except for Bhagavad Dharma. They want to try and solve them, but in the end you have to accept God and you have to take shelter of Him. And then God gives a whole system like that. And by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand how polygamy works. If there are 5 or 6, you know, men or women to each man, okay, it's no problem. We can deal with this, you know. And what is the relationship between men and women in marriage like that, you know? And in ISKCON too, you know? Yeah. Parashara says, Prabhupada recommends Parashara Dharma Shastra. He says in Kali Yuga, the fourth age, unmarried girls, maidens, are becoming mothers. Rascals and robbers and thieves are conquering the government. And women are conquering men. This is invariably what happens in the fourth age, like that. So very practical instructions. Yeah. So our thoughts then, yeah, it's a very, very important topic then. So maybe then somebody else like to make some comments here then, like that discussion.
Okay, I've opened up reconferencing. If anybody has any questions or comments, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Well, I'll pose a question. Maharaj, you were, I think it's one of these ones where we're not going to come up with a nice, easy answer. But you made the comment, or you were pointing out about the, in Peru, the mining industry was obtaining the very critical elements for the sophisticated electronics. And then you said, of which we are supporting. So do we, you know, boycott and not use electronic equipment to have these wonderful sanghas, or does that sort of fall into the category of when, for example, devotees pointed out to Prabhupada that sugar was filtered through cow bones, and should we not use sugar? Prabhupada fermented something to the effect that, well, it's Kali Yuga, what can we do? What are your thoughts in that regard?
It was interesting because yesterday Hector Behar, because he gets, UNESCO and everybody else, they get money from different multinational corporations to do their work. So he was making this point that when he was with Che Guevara, he was shooting bullets at these people and, trying to kill them and drive them out to protect the people, And now he's taking money from them, So he said it becomes a really heavy, thing in his own consciousness about this. But it's exactly the same point. The same point about static there. They're taking out a thorn with a thorn. And so it's a very tricky thing. But that's the point. We use the technology to change things for the better, like that, And so we're very careful to use it properly to try and eliminate the disease, but we're using the thorn to take out a thorn. So that's my understanding, but it's tricky, because you don't cut yourself more with a thorn.
That's good. That's helpful.
Go ahead.
I have two or three points, like what we read. First is regarding we were working on this nation state proposal in which you said there was communism and there was capitalism. And we also read around 5-6 theories, and we were like, from theocracy to kingship to monarchy, then to democracy, then to nation, then to state. So we were just observing that there is a lot of problems. And even if we apply the Vedic system and if we forget God, still we have a problem. So what we were able to understand that until unless we get God in, even if the God-given solutions will not be properly working to us, because we will misuse them.
That's exactly the point that that Narada Muni makes to Vyasadeva. He tells him, you presented the Varnashram system so nicely in the Mahabharata, you presented it so nicely that even a fool can understand it and apply it. But there's no idea of an infallible hero, that everybody needs to take shelter of. Then it won't be bright. People will look for that fire and that brightness and sense gratification. That's the Bhagavad Purana. In the age of Kali, there has to be an idea of an infallible God in the ideology. And that's what both Hector and Miguel were saying. Peru lacks a hero. It lacks an image like that. That doesn't have it now, some high image. The image is Spider-Man. The image is Harry Potter. And so they need another image, which is a King Arthur or something like that, to latch on to. That's your infallible hero.
Yes. And regarding this point of women trying to become independent, I don't know in India, I don't know this problem of polygamy, monogamy is there, but it's just started to become degraded, and they are trying to form women association are surviving and somehow. But what can we do if we are not able to create good men? This is a solution they have to go for.
That's a very, for example, here it's even more interesting because, of course, the women and children are unprotected. And maybe you know about this, the children form their own gangs, and they're called piranhas. Piranhas are these little fish that live in the water that eat meat. And so somehow or other, if you go in the water and you agitate them, hundreds of them will just attack you, and they'll just rip you to pieces, just rawr, literally just tear you to pieces like that. So the children's gangs were like called piranhas. They would do that. They would just come out of the abandoned houses and then assault adults and, you know, knock them down, take their wealth and run away like that, you know, in organized, systematic fashion. And like 14-year-old kids would be gang leaders, but they were, you know, they had no food, you know, so many things, diseases and everything else. And so, you know, what to do. So they were becoming independent and forming their own social structures. In some ways, I don't think it's bad. You know, but basically, our whole thing is Bhagavad Dharma. So whenever it comes to me like this point, I always quote the example of Prabhupada, Mother Shilavati. Yeah. I think maybe somebody's breathing into their microphone. If you can kind of separate the microphone from
you. Can you mute while you're not speaking? That's coming too strong through. And then unmute when you're ready.
Yeah, okay. So one time, as I heard the story from Krita Karma Prabhu, who was there, somebody gave Prabhupada a very nice deity of Krishna. And it was pretty good size. Like maybe it'll be like almost, not 2 feet, but, you know, maybe 18 inches. It's very beautiful. And Prabhupada had it on his desk in San Francisco for a few days. And then one day he was working with the devotees. And he said, call Mother Shilavati. So she was like maybe like 27 years old or something. And most of the girls were like, you know, 18 to 23 or something, the oldest. So she came in, yes, Srila Prabhupada, and he looked at her and said, you are too old to get married. Of course, she was shocked. Then he smiled and gave her the deity and said, so you should marry Krishna, like that. And then she was like in bliss, you know. So devotees say she took it that way. She took it that Krishna, you know, Prabhupada has married me to Krishna. So she would cook for the deity and go buying clothes for him and argue with him about things and complain and, you know. And Krishna in the Kali Yuga, he reciprocates. So of course this is kind of a very high standard, but I would say it works. A sincere girl who's not being protected because of the circumstances and the environment, she can always take shelter of Krishna and chant Hare Krishna, like Draupadi, and then have a deity, and then Krishna will reciprocate and Krishna will take care of you. So that's Bhagavad Dharma in the Kali Yuga. And then maybe he'll arrange things. Okay, I'm taking care of you, I'm Krishna, but let me also then arrange, you know, a nice brother. And we've tried to do that here in our arrangements, that devotees said that when Prabhupada was there, in the very beginning, it was very much like a family feeling. And there was very much like this sister and brother feeling like that. And now all the emphasis is on the conjugal relationship. But no, mother and children and brothers and sisters. And then you have, you know, some kind of nice relationship where, you know, boys need like emotional help. So girls offer that. They lend a sympathetic ear and talk to somebody and help them. And then girls need somebody to fix their plumbing. Okay, so the boys come over and fix the plumbing and the girls have some pizza for them. But we understand it's brother and sister, and it shouldn't go into becoming suddenly wanting to become married. No. But the second thing is in developing, you know, brother and sister relations, taking shelter of Krishna in the deity form. And, you know, some of the girls here, they're quoting that there's a T-shirt kind of floating around now that, you know, route went, and it says on it, no boyfriend, no problem. So it's become kind of a slogan amongst the girls here and something like that, you know. And before there was this big, strong culture of nuns, and they'd all live together in monasteries. And it still is going on. Here it's still going on. You know, not as much as it used to be, but still it's there, and there's a real kind of standard of how it works. And in our ISKCON community, we're developing that, and then girls are feeling, okay, we belong to a community, we belong to a family, and sisterhood is powerful. Okay, it is Kali Yuga. And so then girls are taking maybe a more aggressive position and organizing and taking care of things. Okay, you know, I think in Kali Yuga, it's like Kali Yuga, chapter 17 of the first canto, it means the age of compromise. There is no pure varna ashram dharma. So ladies becoming independent and taking care of things, I think to a reasonable amount, it's not that wrong or that unexpected, you know. Not ideal, but that's just the way things are. Okay, and so we keep it within bounds and then everything is okay. That's my ideas. Hare Krishna.
You have very good ideas.
Oh, yeah? We haven't heard any ladies yet. Come on.
Although I'll tell you, in the United States, polygamy is not well accepted because usually men will really exploit that, you know, go on welfare and just have a lot of children and leave it for the state to take care of.
There
of course,
was
we know better, but boy, that is not accepted very well.
There was one case recently, I forgot where it was, and it was kind of like, okay, we exposed, and there was one fellow married to like six girls. Actually, it was a variety of people, I think. It was some. It wasn't Mormons, but it was some Christian group, you know, some small sect group. And the one lady reporter was reporting on it, and she interviewed the ladies, and she said, actually, you know, most of the girls are quite happy with the situation. And she even said that, you know. Because like you're saying, it's not a popular thing, but there was the... And again, maybe the media knows exactly what they're allowing to be printed and not printed. And so maybe there is some kind of, like, you know, tendency towards it or accept it or else. With Hector, we were talking with him, and he was saying the same thing, is just that people are just, like, have become so frustrated with every single possible ideology that they're open for, they're really becoming open for a big change. And one of the things he suggested, which is actually a real fact, is fascism. Is some Latin leader emerges, and he's a charismatic guy, and he starts pulling all the Latin people together and this and that. And, you know, that's, of course, what happened in Germany and other places. So you see, that's one unfortunate, you know, possibility to solving the situation is a fascist, you know, consciousness like that. Yeah. Our general approach to all these studies is that you can't possibly understand everything, but we can discuss a little bit, get some ideas, and especially we can start figuring out where we're all supposed to be working individually, you know. And then as we develop our own individual knowledge and stuff like that, we can all cooperate to make a nice society like that, you know. Yeah. In general, the role of ladies always being presented by Ram and everything else. Is internal, that they're inspiring, you know, that they inspire the men to act in a certain way and develop like that by their own good qualities, like of compassion, you know, sympathy, like that. And also, what's the word, dignity. It's interesting because in the Spanish, English we say that ladies' dharma is shyness and chastity. Now, they've been translating the word shyness as timidez, which means like timid, that ladies should be chaste and timid. Now, of course, in English, the word timid means like somebody is a little bit of a coward, like that. You know? And I asked them, and they said, well, yeah, it actually has the same connotation in Spanish. So we're discussing it with some more like erudite devotees, like Yadananda Swami, and he was saying, yeah, it had always been in the back of his mind, too. And he said, the actual word is actually rekatava. And that means like somebody who you know, they keep their feelings and their, you know, to themselves. It's somebody who's a little bit like self-contained in terms of their dealings and stuff, and not bad, but like who can consult with themselves about things. But for 30 years now, all these Spanish girls have been trying to be timid, but that's not what we're, you know, not what we're really preaching, you know. No, girls can be aggressive, you know, but within their own way of doing it, you know. So it's 12:30 now. Actually, we're supposed to have a meeting with Bhadra Rupa. His father is in charge of the Peruvian Secret Service, which we did a program with him one time, which downtown Lima, high class area in Lima, with, you know, like houses that have like three lots and stuff, with big walls around them. So we got out, and there was a guy in front of the door and door into the wall with a full suit on with a machine gun, you know. So he saw Bhadra Rupa and nodded and let us go inside, maybe five or six. we got inside, his father embraced him in the office, and then we said, go in, we're waiting, you know, this is Hanuman Swami, okay, you know. So we all walked in, there's about 40 police officers, and they all had the same kind of suits with the same kind of ties. They all had these big, thick necks, and about 15 police ladies, and they all had their hair in a bun. They all had the same kind of identical purses, identical dresses, you know. And we walked in, they just were sitting there like with their hands folded on the desk, you know, looking forward. So we all sat down, oh my God, you know. Then his father walked in, they all stood up together like, you know. He said, ladies, gentlemen, they all sat down. So anyway, the preaching in different countries really, you got to really adjust and appreciate the local. That's why the Mormons, they have a heavy program educating their preachers in Brigham Young before they send them out. So anyway, please, thank you very much for your association. Next week we'll be in Chiclayo, off in the country. We're trying to do some rural development. I think we should connect there too.
Huh?
That'll be from the country, almost in the jungle.
Maharaj, before you go, I just wanted to say that I'm sure we all really are enlivened by the reports you're giving about the preaching. It's just amazing. 40,000 people listening for a half hour. That's just phenomenal. That should be in, we don't have this kind of review anymore, but it should be on the news.
But it's pretty common. That's just, once you're on the radio in most places, you've got an audience. You know? But the thing about this was the guy was a very intelligent person, very nice, and asking very good questions. You know, it was very gratifying. Okay, so thank you very much. Please
thank you, Maharaj. Very inspiring.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bo.
Hare Bo.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.